Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and hey, Middlesex County, it's your turn in our anecdotal census of people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. If you want to participate, just go to our website and answer the question, the biggest change in my neighborhood over the last 10 years has been what? We have a separate page for each county in our listening area. We invite your posts from wherever, but this week we're focusing especially on Middlesex County, New Jersey. So we invite all our Middlesex listeners. Where are you? Are you in New Brunswick? Are you in Edison? Are you in Plainsboro? Wherever you are, to go to the page and describe the biggest change in your neighborhood over the last 10 years. And we'll talk about how Middlesex has changed on this Thursday show. Join us in creating your anecdotal census of people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. Go to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, Middlesex County. It's your week. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court has just ruled that the Second Amendment applies to the states. This strikes down a handgun ban in Chicago. The court has also ruled that public universities do not have to fund religious student organizations. These are big decisions on the final day of the Supreme Court's term. They also agreed today to hear a challenge to Arizona's new immigration law. That was fast. And the court declined to weigh in to a 10-year dispute over tobacco regulation. So a lot coming out on the final day of the Supreme Court's term and the very day that Elena Kagan's confirmation hearings are set to begin this afternoon. Dahlia Lithwick, senior editor for Slate, who covers the Supreme Court, is back with us. Hello again, Dahlia.
Hi there, Brian.
So have you been busy cramming over the last hour and a half since these last four decisions came out?
I was in court, and so the justices read their opinions from the bench. You can't actually get your hands on the opinion until they're done. So it was a lot of shorthand taking, is what it was, so that I could at least get some sense of what happened. But as you said, it was a very big day. And let me also note that Ruth Bader Ginsburg's husband, Marty, died last night, and the session opened today with a really lovely tribute. The Chief Justice kind of gave a little obituary and then said this session was dedicated to Marty Ginsburg. I should also add that Ruth Bader Ginsburg surprised a lot of us by being on the bench today to read her opinion.
Let me correct one thing I said. I guess it's not the new Arizona immigration law that the Supreme Court agreed to enter the fray on. It's a previously existing law. They accepted an appeal from the Arizona Chamber of Commerce, the American Civil Liberties, and others to a lower court ruling that upheld Arizona's law. The measure requires employers to verify the eligibility of prospective employees through a federal database called E-Verify and imposes sanctions on companies that knowingly hire undocumented workers. So that was the ongoing debate about business and immigration law, not the new Arizona law that the Supreme Court agreed to hear. But tell me about the Second Amendment applying to the states and localities. Chicago had what kind of a law that the Supreme Court struck down?
They had what was effectively a gun ban, Brian. It looked almost exactly like the one that was struck down 2 years ago in the District of Columbia. And so this was a very, very similar ban, which made it an easy, in some sense, case because they were looking at a similar handgun restriction. The issue for the court was not to relitigate the Second Amendment, although listening to opinions today, they did an awful lot of that. The issue was whether a ban that was came under the federal Second Amendment would be incorporated, the right to bear arms would be incorporated as against the state. So this was a kind of technical constitutional question about whether one Second Amendment right to bear arms that we established for the first time in Heller in 2008 is in fact going to apply to all the states and municipalities that also regulate firearms.
Do you happen to know how this might affect New York's existing gun laws? I don't think they went as far as Chicago did, but certainly it's very stringent here compared to more rural parts of the country.
You know, one of the things that Justice Alito, who read for the 5-4 majority in this case, was very careful to say is that this is limited to the gun ban that was described in Heller and limited to the gun ban that was described in Chicago. In other words, he wasn't going to be more specific, and that was a cause of some frustration after Heller about, well, what is legal? What isn't legal? What kinds of restrictions are you sweeping in? What are you fencing off? And that was left quite open after Heller. It was left quite open again today, and that was one of the things that Justice Breyer, I think, objected to a little bit in his dissent. So essentially, we know that a pretty much what is effectively a complete handgun ban, as we saw in D.C. and as we saw in Chicago, is unconstitutional. We don't know how that implicates everything else, and it's very, very clear. This also came up in Justice Breyer's dissent. We're going to see an enormous amount of litigation now. Everybody is going to bring suits in their respective jurisdictions to try to flesh that question out.
Another big ruling today from the court. Public universities do not have to fund religious student organizations?
That's right. This was the case that Justice Ginsburg read from the bench, and it was another 5-4 ruling. This had to do with the University of Hastings Christian Legal Society. They have a policy that says that they will not admit gay students to their group, but they never want the less wanted recognition as a school, as a formal school organization. There's all sorts of benefits that accrue to you if you're recognized by the school, not the least of which is that student fees go into your pockets. But you also get to communicate with the students and use the school facilities. The Christian Legal Society said, hey, we are allowed to discriminate against gay members because we have First Amendment rights to religion and to association. We can, in effect, determine what kind of organization we are. You can't make us admit gay students. That violates our constitutional rights. No, 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 says Justice Ginsburg again in a 5-4 opinion. The Hastings policy, which essentially says that in order to be recognized as a school organization, means you have to accept all comers, and all comers means all comers. That policy is constitutional. She went through all the reasons why it's important to foster tolerance. CLS is still allowed to use school facilities. And then she said, you know, Hastings is not asking for a regular constitution right. They're asking for an extra right to discriminate and call it a First Amendment right, and that she will not give them.
The vote on the gun ruling was 5-4, I guess along the usual lines. How about on this one?
Well, I will clarify one thing. Justice Thomas, it was 5-4, but in some sense it was 4-4-1. Justice Clarence Thomas in the gun case voted with the conservative bloc, but he would have gone farther, and this is really inside baseball, but he would have scrutinized this as a privileges and immunities case under the 14th Amendment, which was much farther than the other justices were willing to go. This was 5-4 going the other way with the usual lineup. I have not yet read the dissent, but Justice Alito apparently wrote a dissent.
Interesting. Now, you said that Justice Ginsburg was there despite the death of her husband last night. She even read her opinion from the bench, the lead opinion in the Hastings case, the university case. Maybe it's an obvious thing, but how come? I mean, almost nobody goes to work on the day that their longtime spouse dies. Is it that it's the last day of the Supreme Court session? Is it that it's Justice Stevens' last day on the bench? Is it that she cared particularly about this case? Why did Justice Ginsburg attend?
You know, we're going to have to do some reporting on that. I will say, I guess I already said, some folks were surprised to see her there. Today really was a tribute to Justice John Paul Stevens. It was his last day on the bench after almost 35 years. The audience today in the court was full of bow ties, Brian, because all sorts of litigators and all sorts of even members of the press corps were wearing little jaunty bow ties because that is Justice Stevens' signature look. So it's certainly possible she wanted to be there on his final day on the bench. And I think it's also possible, and you could hear it in her voice reading the Christian Legal Society case, that this case was important to her and that she'd really, I think, probably wanted to be present. But you're quite right. I think it's an extraordinary thing to lose one's husband the night before after 50-some years of marriage and to nevertheless be sitting on the bench to read your opinions.
Talia Lithwick from Slate, as we talk about the last day of the Supreme Court, the very day that the Elena Kagan confirmation hearings begin this afternoon. And this was Justice Stevens' last day on the bench. Did he use these opinions to make any last statements of what he thinks matters in the Constitution in a larger sense?
Well, I should add that I ducked out before the session was completely over so that I'd be able to talk to you. So it's not clear to me whether he ended up reading aloud his dissent in the PICO case, the case that had to do with the Public Accounting Oversight Board. That was the last case that they handed down today. And when I left, Justice Stephen Breyer was reading a dissent. So certainly Stevens, by seniority, they read their opinions in reverse order of seniority. It's entirely possible that Stephen read a dissent there that I've missed, in which case I'll let you know about it in the next couple of weeks. He did read a dissent aloud, and I think you know, but maybe your listeners don't. The justices only read their dissents aloud when they're really quite firm that the court has made a terrible mistake. It's seen as a sort of very dramatic thing to read your dissent from the bench. But nevertheless, Justice John Paul Stevens did read a dissent today in another case that was the business patents case, the Bilski case. That was a case that was, it looks to me like it was unanimous, although I think it's a complicated decision that had to do with whether you could patent a certain method of, believe it or not, an accounting method that had to do with a hedge risk. Justice Kennedy read for the majority, and Justice Stevens read a concurrence in which he said he thought that Justice Kennedy was being, he called him timid in this decision, and that he would have had a much, much narrower reading of the exception to the business patent doctrine. So he did, I think, feel important, sort of strongly enough about that, but he read it from the bench. He may have done something else, as I said, in the public accounting case.
Is the reading of a concurrence or a dissent the only way that he could express himself on his last day after so many years? Or could he just say, okay, folks, thanks a lot for coming. I'm glad you're all wearing bow ties to honor me. And here's what I'd like to say today and launch into something. Can he do that?
Haven't seen it happen. Usually it's quite the opposite, Brian, and they just go. Sometimes the Chief Justice makes a statement thanking them for their work. As I said, because I missed the very last few minutes, I don't know if the Chief Justice thanked him for his service. I will tell you that in a Supreme Court on a day when Ruth Bader Ginsburg has just lost her husband, it's Stevens' last day across the street, they're gearing up for the Kagan hearings. This was more drama than I've ever seen at the court, and the amount of drama that was betrayed by Justice Stevens was that I definitely saw him grin when he saw that sea of bow ties.
That's a lot of expression for Justice Stevens from the bench, huh? This is another Supreme Court story that moved on the wires today. I don't even know if this was apparent to you in the courthouse, but the Supreme Court has rejected appeals by the Obama administration and the nation's largest tobacco companies to get involved in a legal fight about the dangers of cigarette smoking that has stretched more than 10 years. The court's action, issued without comment, leaves in place lower court rulings that the tobacco industry illegally concealed the dangers of smoking for decades, but it also prevents the administration from trying to extract billions of dollars from the industry, either in past profits or to fund a national campaign to curb smoking. Any comment about that?
I think I don't want to comment on it until I see what's happened, Brian. But I do think we sometimes—I guess I should say this—we sometimes read too much into these denials of cert. It doesn't necessarily mean that there were five, or as the rule is, four justices who voted one way or another, what it often means is that the justices are looking at the other justices and trying to decide if this is the right case and this is the moment to take it. So in a lot of these cert denials, it looks as though the court is being very, very decisive and definitive, when in fact sometimes they're looking at their colleagues and trying to figure out if this is really, really the form in which they want to think about this issue.
Adding to the poignancy of today, of course, in addition to Stevens and Bader Ginsburg, is the death of Robert Byrd. And coming up in just a few minutes, we will talk to somebody about the life of this extraordinary U.S. senator, warts and all, Ku Klux Klan early in his life and all. But we will also take your eulogies, listeners, for Robert Byrd. If you want to post them to our site, you can start doing that now at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll take them on the phones. You can start calling now, 212-433-WNYC, your eulogies for Senator Robert Byrd, who died early this morning, 212-433-9692. But Dahlia Lithwick, before you go, just briefly, Elena Kagan's confirmation hearings begin this afternoon. We will devote a lot of our program tomorrow to listening live to some of those hearings. But the media originally talked about how little of a paper trail there was from Kagan's career to understand where she's coming from. But then all these emails and all these other things began to come out. What are all these writings from her past? And compared to when she was first nominated weeks ago, do you feel like you have a much better sense of who Elena Kagan is likely to be as a U.S. Supreme Court justice?
You know, I don't. And I think most people would say that they don't, that this is a person who has lived a life that is pretty, pretty aware at every turn that there might be scrutiny. And so even the most intemperate emails, and this is 160,000 pages of Clinton documents that were released. So the fact that you can find five of them that have strong language or one of them that compares the NRA to the KKK does not really, I think, bespeak a non-judicial temper. She is very, very meticulous about the law. She's always trying to be as centrist and as narrow as she can. I think that those emails stand in as a proxy because she hasn't been a sitting judge. We don't know much about her, and so these emails become more important. But I think really to the extent that they reveal anything, they reveal that this is somebody who is pretty narrow, pretty cautious. She tends to be very, very inclined to hear all comers and then pronounce judgment. In other words, depending on the side of the aisle you're on, probably would be either a really good or really bad judge. But I don't think that there's a sense that there is a passionate heart of fire waiting to leap out at these hearings and start screaming.
In what context did she compare the NRA to the KKK?
There was one line in one email that the NRA has been very excited about. I think she called them bad guy organizations or some such thing. And certainly the NRA has been very, very upset by this and suggests that it means that she's sort of biased against gun rights and gun owners. It's probably worth saying after today's 5-4 decision in the Chicago case that even if she does get confirmed and even if she is wildly biased against Second Amendment rights, it doesn't make much of a difference on the court. She'd be replacing John Paul Stevens, who also does not think that there's a Second Amendment individual right to bear arms in order to protect yourself in your home.
And I can't imagine how much more they can expand the Second Amendment after today.
Well, I think that was Justice Breyer's big, big complaint, is that they handed down a very, very close and very controversial decision 2 years ago, and they went ahead and expanded it despite not having any real empirical evidence, A, that that's historically appropriate, and B, how it's going to affect the states and the cities that are really trying in different ways to keep their citizens safe.
And listeners, in case you're inclined to pick through Elena Kagan's inbox, we have a link to all those emails from when she worked in the Clinton administration. And if you want to look through them and post to a page that we've set up anything interesting that you find, you can do that. Just go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show to get to Elena's inbox. And we thank Dahlia Lithwick, senior editor for Slate.com, who's going to be back with us tomorrow to do a little play-by-play of the Elena Kagan confirmation hearings. So, Dahlia, talk to you then.
I'll talk to you then. Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. And coming up, we will spend the last few minutes of our program today remembering Senator Robert Byrd. And if you want to say anything about him, you can call right now, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692.